Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Let's Rethink This. I'm your host, Abby Berger. Today, I'm talking to Cherie Solario. Cherie is a St. Louis-born, raised, and based writer, director, and producer who focuses on telling stories where Black women and girls exist as full human beings on the screen and feel seen, heard, loved, and affirmed beyond the screen. She recently completed her fourth short documentary, Black Girl Blue, a conversation with Black women about the strong Black woman myth and how it impacts the mental health challenges they've been through, face, and have overcome. You guys, let me tell you, this film is so powerful. We're going to get into this a little bit later on, but wow, talk about a woman who is uplifting other women in her community. She's doing the work that needs to be done. And I am so glad she made this film. I absolutely loved it. We're going to talk more about it. But, my take is that it's an awesome film and everybody should watch it. So a little bit more about her. In 2020, she launched 11 Star Studio, a film, television, digital, and streaming production company that uses intimate and authentic storytelling to explore and reveal intrinsic magic, beauty, and worth. Next, she is launching Black Girl Blue, the community, a digital space for Black women to share their past and present mental health challenges, tend to their mental wellness, and begin to heal. She has a master's degree in media communications from Webster University in St. Louis, as well as a bachelor's in communication and film studies certificate from St. Louis University. I'm really excited that she's here today, and I'm so glad that we were able to connect and schedule this time to have a conversation. So welcome.
Thank you, Abby. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
So I'd love to start off with just hearing a little bit more about your background. I know you're from St. Louis, but where did you grow up? You know, can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing?
Yes. So I am the oldest of four. I started growing up in Northwoods, probably up until about kindergarten. Then my family and I moved to Florissant. So I've been a Florissant kid ever since. I'm still there. And it's a community that I feel very connected to and proud to be a part of. Growing up was, I had a lot of interesting experiences. As you can imagine, going from Northwoods, a predominantly Black area, to Florissant, where there weren't too many people of color. It was a stark contrast and required a lot of, you know, transition. I remember hearing things growing up like, you're ugly because you're Black, or, you know, somebody sniffed me and was like, oh, you smell good. I thought Black people stink. So I dealt with things like that growing up. And so that meant that I was hyper aware of my surroundings and what people thought about me and how people saw me. So I'm pretty sure I dealt with anxiety growing up at that such a young age. But I also had relief. Writing was the way that I expressed myself, that I gave myself room to just be comfortable with me. And another way was messing with the family camcorder. Like, I would record myself dancing and singing to Aaliyah's music videos and, you know, Destiny's Child and all of that, and reciting monologues and dancing and just being myself. So film or the video camera or making things has always been my my refuge, along with my favorite Uncle Neil, who passed away a few years ago and is part of the inspiration for Black Girl Blue.
Wow, that's... what an interesting upbringing. And you guys couldn't see this because you're listening, but as she was explaining kind of some of the comments that were made to her growing up, it's just takes you back a little bit, you know, that someone would even have the audacity to say something like that or think that it's appropriate to make a comment about someone's appearance or smell just so foreign and not good. We should not be doing that. So here's a PSA to everybody listening. Don't make comments on other people's look. So anyway, you went to St. Louis University for undergrad. So when you were going into school, did you know that communications, kind of media, filmmaking was your focus going into it?
Yeah, so I studied communication along with a film study certificate. And the reason I studied communication was because I wanted to write. And then I was also interested in like journalism. So it was a perfect environment for me to explore all of those things. So I think I've always known that I wanted to do something where I made things, you know, whether that was writing or making a movie or videos. That was my training.
Yeah. And after school, it looks like, I mean, just based off of your website, that you wrote for a number of publications that are very well known, you know, the St. Louis American, The Root, 2190, CurlyNikki.com, Gazelle Magazine, and often you are writing from a Black perspective. And can you tell us a little bit more about that? Were you asked to do that, or was that just where you were feeling most inspired and most passionate about contributing?
Yeah, so it all started. So like you mentioned, I got my master's from Webster University. And so my thesis was on Black women and our portrayals in reality television. So I analyzed shows like The Real Housewives of Atlanta, Flavor of Love, which was a big show at the time. And so that was really something I was passionate about, is how are Black women being seen? And that goes back to my childhood, because that's one of the things I became concerned with because of my experiences. So for me, I've always seen racism being related to perceptions of people. So I've always been concerned with how do we transform that and offer other perspectives and views. So that's what I talked about in my thesis. And so after I graduated, one of the first things I did was wrote a short piece, a condensed version of my thesis for the St. Louis American. So that was my very first published piece, outside of a writing contest that I won in high school. But so once I kind of got that bug, and then I wrote another article from them, and then I just started doing other things. I was still, you know, in school at Webster. But then I got a public relations associate job at an agency downtown St. Louis. And before that, I was a temp at Nestle Purina in their IT department. And so I wanted to stay there in PR, but I didn't have the experience, but I still connected with the team. And one of the women there, Bonita Tillman, kind of took me under her wing as a mentor. So we kept in touch. We still keep in touch. Like, she literally emailed me a couple of days ago. So through Bonita, I learned about the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists. And so I joined that group. And while I was a PR associate at the agency downtown, this was in 2013 through 2015, she emailed me and she was like, The Root is looking for writers, because it was right after Michael Brown's murder. Von Derrick Myers had just been murdered. And so they were looking for someone to cover the protest and write pieces on it. So I was like, I should take a stab at this. This would be fun. So I wrote my first article. The editor loved it. He was pleasantly surprised. And so from there, they started assigning me other pieces. And I wrote for them for about 4 or 5 years. And then I started getting back into film and television and realized that I wanted to do some entertainment pieces. So I reached out to the St. Louis American to see if I could write for them again. And then someone who I went to high school with was the managing editor for Curly Nikki. And they were like, hey, do you want to write some pieces for us? So I did that for a year or so. Scylla Hall, the editor-in-chief of Gazelle Magazine, liked my, I guess, Wellness Wednesday social media or IG post, where I would kind of share some of my story and encourage people. And she said she liked those pieces. So she asked if I could write for the magazine or write them for the magazine. So that's how all of those things happen.
It's honestly the power of community. And I think that speaks to really how St. Louis operates. You know, there's a lot of, oh, I know so-and-so and let me get you connected here, and utilizing those connections and resources to kind of propel you forward. So that's really interesting how you moved forward. So how did you make the transition from writing into assistant producing, filmmaking, and then executive producing?
Yeah, so While I know I was doing a lot at the at one time. So while I was a PR associate, while I was writing on the side for The Root, once Michael Brown was killed, I started thinking about what am I doing? You know, like what do I really want to do? What do I really enjoy? And so of course that was writing. So I started writing, but it was also film and TV. I didn't tell this story earlier, but my mom always tells me that when I was a baby, like in my walker, I would run up to the TV and just sit there and stand there in front of it. And she would always, you know, come up and get me and bring me back, and I would cry and then run back up. So I always loved the TV for whatever reason. So I was just thinking, like, how can I get back in TV? How can I get back on that side? So some years before that, I was an intern at STL TV, which is St. Louis City's government access station. I was excited about the opportunity, but I was scared because I didn't know, you know, I was just scared because it was something totally new. So I wasn't there for that long. But in 2014, I remembered that I was there. And so I reached out to Andre Holman, who was a manager of the station, and asked him if I could be an intern or a volunteer again. So he said yes. And I remember helping with a couple of pieces. He had a project that he was getting ready to launch called The Daily Mix. And so he asked me to come on as a writer and producer. And so I went from an intern to a paid freelancer and helped to launch the show. So I wrote scripts and helped, you know, put all the elements of the script together. And honestly, I've been writing, directing, and producing ever since then. I went from a filmmaking training program with Continuity STL to working on sets for projects like Netflix and Oxygen. It's just literally been evolving since then, and I've decided that now is the time for me to still do those types of things, but focus on what my heart wants to bring into the world. So that's why I'm executive producing through 11 Star Studios.
I think that's really cool. And I think every work experience that you have teaches you something and introduces you to people. And, you know, maybe they're there for a season or maybe they're there for a lifetime, but all those people get you to where you need to be. So now you're working on something and that I mentioned earlier. It's called Black Girl Blue, and it's a documentary that I have watched. It's very, very good. And I want you to tell the listeners what is Black Girl Blue first.
Yeah, so Black Girl Blue is a conversation, a safe space for Black women to share their stories when it comes to mental health. They talk about their most traumatic moments. They talk about what helped them through those moments. And then female therapists also offer insight into the particular mental health challenges that Black women face, along with some tools and practices for healing and for overcoming and for supporting one another through those journeys.
And I guess I should have asked this prior to asking you what Black Girl Blue is, but what was the inspiration to make a film dedicated to Black women and Black women's mental health?
So it goes back to my Uncle Neil. Like I mentioned earlier, he was the one person who I could talk to from sunset to sunrise about any and everything from film, my dreams, you know, teenage stuff. I just felt safe with him, and he was my one person who I knew truly understood me and got me. And he was a creative too. He used to like making music beats. One of his goals or dreams was to be like the next Manny Fresh from the Cash Money crew. So he would do all types of things just to show people that, you know, he was there and that he loved and accepted you. So that was my person. So in 2016, he passed away unexpectedly. It was difficult for me, not only because he was my best friend, but because our relationship was sort of strained. So he lived with schizoaffective disorder. And so towards the end, he became more unpredictable, a bit more aggressive. And so some things happened between us where I had to really just take a step back because I had to, you know, heal and do some inner work. And that was just my way of dealing with it at the time. And so when he passed away, I was, of course, heartbroken. We really weren't talking and we really didn't have that connection that we used to. But of course, I knew he still loved me and I still loved him. So I knew that I needed to heal and that that was one thing that I should, you know, strive for. But for me, being okay always meant that I was still able to go to work. I was still able to accomplish my goals. I was still able to go to school. And so I put my strong Black woman mask on and I went to work. So I was in a film program. I was producing a web series on the side. I was working at Hallmark as a retail merchandiser. I was doing probably 10 jobs at once. And so that was, for me, really my way of quote unquote being okay, even though I really wasn't. So that meant a year later, I was depressed. I was numb. The good things that were happening in my life, I really didn't feel the joy in it. I wasn't really concerned about any of the things that I had enjoyed before. I was sad. And so I had a conversation with a woman who I was friends with for about 10 years at the time about, you know, like what's going on, because our relationship was changing too. And so I told her about everything that was going on. And she told me things like, you're ungrateful for being depressed. No one has a reason to be depressed, and that I don't care what you've been going through. And so for me, not that I expected her to save me or to, you know, walk me through one of the most dark times of my life, but I just needed support. I needed someone to say, maybe you should try this, or maybe you need that, or, you know, what you're feeling is okay. It's understandable. It makes sense. And so I started thinking, like, how can someone who I've known for this long say these things to me and see what I'm going through in that way? So I started thinking about the expectation for Black women to be strong no matter what's going on, to appear to be okay even if we aren't. And so I was like, I know that I'm not the only person who's experiencing this. I know I'm not the only Black woman who's heard these things from other Black women. And so how can I make room for us to tell our truths when it comes to mental health in a judgment-free zone? How can I cultivate empathy by helping Black women tell their stories? And so the film was the best way for us to do that. And so that's how it was born. I put a post on Facebook and I was like, hey, if you're a Black woman and you're dealing with mental health challenges, and you have dealt with mental health challenges and you're open to sharing your story, let me know. I had a lot of women submit, a lot of other women say that they wanted to help. And so we filmed in September 2019. We wrapped it September of last year, 2020. And so it's been on the festival circuit. It's won an award ever since then. And I'm looking forward to more screenings.
And I think this is such an important film for all the reasons that you were talking about, you know, the stigma in the Black community, especially toward women with mental health issues. It's just ingrained in the society so much that you have to live up to this expectation when no one else is being held to that same standard. And it's not good. You know, it is not good to not get help. It's not good to not talk about how you're feeling and find the support that you need. And so I do want to just pause here. And for someone who is maybe not familiar with the strong Black woman stereotype, what would you say is the simplest explanation of that stereotype?
I would say that the strong Black woman stereotype is the idea that Black women are able to carry burden upon burden upon burden without a breakdown, without needing help, and without needing support.
And I think it's so interesting to look at it, and I would be so curious to read your what's the word I'm looking for? Read your
thesis.
Your thesis. Yes, thank you. My brain just stopped for a minute. Read your thesis about it, because I actually just finished Cicely Tyson's memoir. Mm-hmm. And it's so good, but she kind of took the opposite approach when she, and if you don't know who Cicely Tyson is, she's a very famous actress. She's a Black woman. She is one of the first Black women that was really in film, and she dedicated her career to choosing characters, choosing people to represent, that perpetuated that strong woman, strong Black woman in her films. And so it's so interesting now hearing you say perpetuating that idea is not healthy, and that you need to see people in other ways. And I think you see that with other representation, white women, white men, you know, they're given kind of this space to be more than just one archetype on a show. And so I love that you're doing this and having these conversations. What were some of the unexpected things that you learned out of putting that project together?
So I would say the main thing that was unexpected that I learned through making Black Girl Blue is that I still have some healing work that I needed to do. I still had to confront those experiences that I mentioned earlier about, you know, being told those things about being Black. I still had to confront some other traumatic experiences that I went through in middle school. I understood through the project that I lived with and in anxiety. I learned that the same thing with depression, but it also validated for me that I wasn't alone, that I knew I had a feeling that I wasn't the only one, but to have other Black women say it out loud was just freeing in a lot of different ways.
And it sounds like a lot of the community that you built around this documentary came out of the digital space. And, you know, you said I posted on Facebook. So were you pretty active on social media at the start of this documentary? Or, you know, how did that come to be? And what is your social media persona, for a lack of a better descriptor?
Yeah, so I would say at the time I was pretty active on social media, much more than I am now, because at some point social media became a source of you know, negative feelings and comparing myself to others and things like that. So I had to step back to reinvent my relationship with social media. So it's much more healthy now. Like I'm not addicted like I was before. I can take breaks and be okay, and, you know, not feel like I'm missing out on something that I just have to be a part of. I'm able to be more present in my everyday life and really enjoy it and, you know, take those moments into what I create and what I have to share with people through social media. So my persona, that's a good question. So I'm actually kind of, I guess, revamping my social media presence, because I feel like because of what I went through growing up, and because of just the stigma dealing with different things, I kind of have been like in a shell as far as like expressing my true authentic self. And so that meant that, like, I love pretty things, right? Like I love, you know, pastel colors, galaxy print and thing like that. But I had this buttoned up image, the best way to present myself. And sometimes that meant that I didn't get into those raw moments where I was, you know, feeling a certain way. I kind of did, but didn't really, you know, like go there. It was kind of like a surface level thing. So my mission and goal now is to kind of do some of the things that I was doing before, but, you know, dig deep. So I would share, you know, some of my mental health challenges, some lessons from life that I had learned. I'm big on wellness. I'm big on, you know, following your dreams, pursuing your purpose. I'm big on healing, uplifting Black women and girls, and just being the light, in these dark times that we're in and have been in. Is just doing my best to be love as much as I can be.
I think a lot of people are kind of shifting back to being more transparent and being more real on social media. We know social media is a highlight reel. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. You don't put out your lowest lows on social media most of the time, but that highlight reel comes with a lot of baggage, because it exactly what you said, it creates this comparison culture of my life is not as fulfilling or exciting or adventurous or whatever the adjective is that you use as somebody I'm seeing on social media, but that's, you're just seeing their highlight reel. So I like that you're shifting toward that. And before I ask you my next question, I want to make sure people know about this documentary. So it's out, you said it's on the festival circuit, but how can people watch it? How can somebody who's not at a festival learn about it and see this film?
Yeah, so if you go to blackgirlblue.com, which is BlackGirlBlue.com, you can go to the watch page and it'll have upcoming screenings and opportunities to watch the film. You can also sign up for our newsletter, which will share that information as well. So now it's we're doing private screenings and private bookings. And about probably in 2 or 3 months from now, we'll probably think about opening up it up so people can rent it, purchase it, etc. So right now we're just kind of doing the small community screenings because a lot of times that's where people feel more free to share, like, you know, what's really going on in their life, to really ask those deep questions. And that's the space that we're able to, you know, offer, you know, a therapist opinion or have a meditation practitioner or a healer there to help them work through that. So that's where things are now. Go to the website, sign up, and you'll stay updated.
And I can tell you guys, do it. It's an incredible film. It really opens your eyes to a lot of things that these women are facing. You know, as a, I am not a Black woman. Hopefully everybody listening has seen my picture, but I am a white woman. So I have not had this lived experience. And so hearing firsthand from Black women in this film, I think is very powerful. If you are at a company and you're working on your diversity and inclusion and being more equitable to the people that you live and work with, I would highly recommend it, to do a community showing for your organization or your group, and then doing a Q&A afterward to kind of talk about it and learn a little bit. So I think it's really cool. Congratulations on filming it.
Thank you.
The next thing I want to talk about is a little bit aligned with that social media question that I had. So your new project that you're launching is called Black Girl Blue, The Community. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and then who it's for?
Yeah, so Black Girl Blue, The Community is a safe digital space for Black women to connect with other Black women about their mental health journeys, to connect with other practitioners such as, you know, meditation practitioners, therapists, other women who are focused on healing and, you know, tuning in. And it's also an opportunity for Black women to attend virtual support groups and healing circles. So it's a space for us to connect with each other, to be honest, to feel our feelings, and to, you know, just be who we are in a safe space. And so I'm excited about how it's going so far. And I know it's something that I've needed and that we need. So it's been good.
And how did you find or build this community of supporters that you're launching this with? You know, where did these people come from? Are they longtime friends? Are they people that you've met through filming Black Girl Blue? You know, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so the members are definitely people who I've met on social media. Like, I literally have someone who joined from Maryland. I have someone from the UK who's joined, and they found out, through Facebook. Facebook is big. I guess I need to spend more time on Facebook because that's where it seems like a lot of the people and support comes from. So definitely Facebook. I post on there about the community every once in a while, and leading up to, you know, us opening for people to join or Black women to join, I will share on Facebook. But yeah, Facebook, we had a virtual premiere on World Mental Health Day of last year. So October 10th of 2020. And so Eventbrite was the platform that we used for tickets. And someone said that they learned about Black Girl Blue through there. So it's really, for the most part, been digital podcast interviews. I've done a couple of interviews for press, like the St. Louis American. It's been featured in The Root as well. So definitely the digital world has helped us to get where we are.
And how was it developing a digital space? You know, like, had you ever done that before? Did you seek input? You know, what is the digital space look like, and how did you build it?
Yeah, so this is definitely something I have never, ever done before. And when I tell you it is work, it is work. It is so much work. And it's work that I enjoy, though. But I have a business coach, a business and creative coach. She's also a filmmaker. And she has a digital course that she calls Crowdfund Your Dream. So it's to help creatives and other people who want to fundraise, fund their projects or initiatives. And her name is Equal Insane. And so she's helped me throughout this process. Without her, I could not have done it, from marketing to, you know, about graphic design, how to share my story within and, you know, get people interested. Without her, it would not be. But I'm using a platform called Mighty Networks. And it's kind of like Facebook, but it's Facebook specifically for your purpose. So it has a feed, people can post articles, images, videos. So it's like a kind of like a Facebook group, but it's just that one group. You don't see any other groups unless you join other networks. And so I felt like it was important to start it or do it off of Facebook, because Facebook can, you know, be cluttered with so many different group notifications and, you know, posts that people are making. So I wanted this to be a space where we could just focus on us. So I felt like Mighty Networks was the perfect platform to do it.
And how does it work? Like, do you have to, you as the creator, are you creating the prompts, or is it the community, like a Facebook group where anybody can kind of contribute and start topics?
Yeah. So the way we've set it up is that potential members have to request to join. And so when they request to join, they have a couple of questions to ask. One of them is like, what's something people don't know about you, just to share something fun. And then we have them complete a demographic survey, so we know who they are, where they're coming from, what are some of their concerns, what are some of their needs and their experiences with mental health. And so after they've been approved, basically they become a member and they're able to post and engage just like anyone can. However, there is a group of women in the community called founding members, and that was the first 10 women to join. And so they're helping us to, you know, cultivate the connections, helping us to craft and refine the programs and services we provide and things like that. They've helped to determine what wellness sessions we should provide, the best days of the week and things like that. And so they're really helping us to make sure this is something that is beneficial to Black women. So I'm very grateful for each and every one of them. And just as excited about what they have to contribute, because they're already, you know, writing articles in there, sharing, you know, quotes to help us, you know, keep going and stay positive. And so it's been a refreshing experience.
It's kind of like having a personal board of directors, you know, yeah, with that group. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. So is there an age limit to the group? Is it for adults? Is it for girls? What does the space look like now in terms of members?
As far as members, the space looks like adult women. So between the ages of 30 and 45 at this moment, but there isn't an age limit or an age minimum. However, I think it will be geared towards like high school and older, just because it's very, you know, sensitive material. And yeah, so I think it's like 18 and older, I think would be best suited for it.
And it grew out of this documentary, which is so cool that you recognize the need for this space and then built it, and now it's thriving and growing. How many members are in the group now?
Yeah, so now we have 16 members, including myself, and the goal is to have 50 by the end of this year. And I've actually tried to figure out what's a good number, because we want it to be small enough so that we can have intimate conversations and really, you know, dig deep when it comes to things. But then we want to impact as many Black women as possible. So we'll see what that looks like moving forward. But it's steady growing every day. Every other few days, I have requests to join. So I guess in the meantime, we'll just, you know, just keep connecting in small groups as we can.
Absolutely. I think that those intimate connections are very powerful and really can provide a lot of support to people as they navigate their lives and everything that comes with that. So I want to ask, what are your hopes? This is a really big question, but what are your hopes for the future of Black women and girls moving forward? You know, is it isolated to more representation? What does it look like to you for Black women and girls to be successful and loved and heard and appreciated in our community?
So what I really want to see is Black women and girls, all types of Black women and girls, accepted and appreciated and loved and respected exactly as they are. I want to see more representations of us that are complex and full, you know, not one-dimensional. I want to see us cry. I want to see us laugh. I want to see us full of joy. I want to see us sassy because we're that too. I want to see us, you know, being bosses because we're bosses. I want to see the full range of who we are as human beings. And I feel like that would do a lot to deconstruct all the stereotypes there are of who Black women are. Not just a strong Black woman, but, you know, there's the angry Black woman. And so I want us to be seen as human beings first and foremost. And I want us to be able to show up as exactly who we want to show up as, from our hair to the way we dress, how we speak, how we show up. I just want us to be free.
And I think it's important to ask you this too. This community is for Black women, and it is to grow as Black women and become more comfortable with vulnerability and live your life to your fullest. But what can someone who is not a Black woman do to support that?
That's a great question and amazing question. So if you want to support Black women expressing and being the fullest of themselves, I think the first place to start is understanding your preconceived notions of who Black women are, the way your interactions with them impact you as far as your thoughts. Like, what does that make you think about that Black woman? Does it impact the way you see most Black women and things like that? And just do the work of deconstructing those notions and understand that there's a reason why everyone is the way that they are. There's something points to something else before you even met them, before you even engage with them. So just to see, give them room and give yourself room to really see them as a person who has been through things, who is going through things, and who is growing just like hopefully you are. And I think if you want to support Black Girl Blue, is to tell people about the film, tell people about the community. Where, you know, we need support from everyone. It's going to take all of us. So that's what I was saying.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it's something you said made me think about this past year in the pandemic and just the stark disparities that we've seen with healthcare and getting access to vaccinations and even transportation. And there's so, it's so complex. It's not an easy fix. But one bright light that I have found through the pandemic is and this is personal to me, so I don't know if this is for everybody, but I have been on Zoom a lot. I have learned a lot about people's families, about their dogs. My dog's always barking in the back of a Zoom, and you have to give people a little bit more grace. And it's definitely taught me to be more empathetic and more patient and kind to people, because you don't know what people are showing up with. And I think specific to this conversation, it is not just my day to day, but it's the generational experiences of being a Black person, what that looks like, you know, the re-traumatization of people seeing racial violence and just health disparities. There's so much going on that people bring with them into interactions that other times I don't think people are very aware of or cognizant of. And even as you were talking about the angry Black woman, and I know that's a stereotype that I've heard before. It's something that is pretty common for, unfortunately, where if someone shows any little bit of emotion, it's automatically, oh, you're an angry Black woman. And that is horrible. And it's just perpetuating this narrative that we don't need in our community, because it's holding people down and it's not letting them live to their fullest and truest self, because we experience a million emotions every day. We are not limited to happy, sad, mad. You know, those aren't our only emotions. There's a lot of other stuff that's happening in our lives. And I think this conversation and your work really sheds light on that. And I appreciate it so much. And I really do encourage anybody listening to go to a showing of this, see it, contact Cherie, get a showing going for you and your friends to learn more, because it's so interesting and it's just very eye-opening. And so I appreciate it so much. I also wanted to know a little bit about what your projects look like in the future. Like, this is a pretty niche topic, I would say. And I think that's really cool that you've found yourself here, but do you want the future of your work to really be focused around this specific topic, or are there other things that you're wanting to explore in your work moving forward?
Yeah, so there are definitely other topics that I would love to explore. I love science fiction. I love fantasy. I love horror as well. So I definitely see myself creating projects with a Black girl and woman and family lens through those genres. So I'm actually getting ready to start writing a narrative short about a Black girl that is semi-autobiographical, but it's like has some fantasy elements and things like that. So yeah, I'm gonna pour out all of my creativity in whatever ways it shows up. So I'm excited about that too.
And do you think it'll be mostly in film, or do you think you'll still continue to write and produce?
Yeah, so I definitely think it'll be in film, but I also see myself writing novels. I've thought about blogging again, but I don't know. I think novels are probably more of where I need to move. But yeah, also directing too. So I want to do all of it. Some of all of it. Be behind the scenes, in front of the camera too. I may, you know, give myself a little cameo, so we'll see.
Nothing wrong with doing it all. When I started this podcast, people were like, well, who's going to do that? Who's going to do all the work? And I said, well, I'll figure it out.
Right. That's usually how it does.
But you know what? It's nice to know how to do everything and kind of switch roles based on what your passion's leading you to in that moment. And I think that's really cool. It sounds awesome. So I want to make sure people know how to follow you, how to join Black Girl Blue, the community. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So we're on Facebook, Instagram, and online at Black Girl Blue. Go to our website, blackgirlblue.com, blackgirlblue.com. There's a page for the community. There's a page to find out where you can watch the film. There's also a mental health resources page if you need assistance. And so sign up for our newsletter to keep updated on everything we have going on.
And it's open to anybody who's listening. So you don't have to be based in St. Louis to join this community. I know you mentioned that a little bit earlier, but I just wanted to reiterate that and make sure that people listening know that you don't have to be here in St. Louis to participate in that community. Community lives everywhere and it can be any shape or form. So I think that's awesome. Well, thank you again so much for being on the podcast today and talking about your projects. I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next and hopefully seeing that community grow. I know there's probably a bunch of people listening that are interested in joining. So I think that's awesome. Oh, okay. So if you guys want more information about Black Girl Blue, the community, we're going to have links in our show notes. So you can check that out. It'll directly link you to the pages that Cherie just mentioned so that you can go there, join, learn more, see the resources, whatever you want to do. You can also follow Cherie on Instagram at Cherie Solario, and it's SHAREESILERIO. So you can follow her on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, and Vimeo, all under the same handle. So we'll put that in our show notes too, in case you are like me and have a hard time with verbal directions and need to see it printed. So I will put that in the show notes. Make sure you're following us on Instagram. Our handle is at Let's Rethink This Pod. We also launched a loyal listeners club. So if you like what you hear each week and you want to donate to support Independent Center and the podcast, you can become either a part-time or a full-time listener and donate $5 or $10 monthly. It is not required to listen to this podcast. It just helps give us some funding to continue making this content for you each week. If you're listening and need resources, you can go to our website, www.independentcenter.org, to find resources. You can find our podcast there. You can learn a little bit more about what Independent Center is doing. And I think that's it. We'll talk to you guys all next week. Thank you so much for being on the show, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next.
Thank you, Abby, for the opportunity. I appreciate it.